What does it even mean to live a legacy? Often we think of legacy in terms of what people might think of us when we're dead, but then we're dead. We're going to instead explore a living legacy. This is your host, Danielle Strickland. This is the Right Side Up podcast. And this is a partnership venture with World Vision, Strong Women, Strong World. This is going to be challenging and inspiring as we interview people from all over the world in all kinds of different sectors, living a life now that will matter later. A living legacy. Buckle up. This is sure to be challenging and inspiring. And I'm glad you're here. Hey, welcome to the Right Side Up, Living a Legacy. I just finished this episode, and so I'm doing the introductions now, and I'm overwhelmed with gratitude that I got to meet this beautiful pair. So this is a mom and son. This is Liesl and Caleb Chung. Liesl and Vin, her husband, Chung, grew up in Arkansas and were high school sweethearts. He was born in Vietnam. So Liesl's husband, which she'll share on this episode, has this epic journey. There's a book about his life. And then Liesl herself has an epic journey and comes from another, from a Korean family. And there's a book, you know, Where the Wind Leads, which is about Vin's life. And then Liesl's life is described in the movie Minari, which was directed by her little brother. So they both met each other in unlikely circumstances and then went on to build a beautiful life together, a wonderful family, a thriving business, and then really took specific measures to live a legacy that they were given, which is that their life mattered and that that other people mattered. And so they began to really move towards philanthropic efforts in their own business. And it's amazing, actually. You can watch that movie and have a bit of empathy towards the family story, or you can read this book and see the legacy really even of World Vision in their willingness to take great risks and attend to people and see people as human and worthy of dignity and love and saving in physical ways, and that how that just keeps going and keeps giving and giving and giving as those people catch that. And then what's really cool about this episode is we get to hear from Caleb, who's a freshman at Harvard, and about his advocacy, which started when he was 10. And he's part of a group called Next Gen with World Vision, and really also giving his life to things that matter. And so he gives some challenges and best advice for his generation. We talk a little bit about parenting. We talk about business. These are exceptional humans who are living their legacy now. And it's a great joy to have them on. I know you're going to love this. So welcome, the Chungs.
Well, a great big welcome to the Right Side Up podcast to Liesl and Caleb Chung. We are so glad you both are here. This is a mother and son. And you guys have, the Chung family has a phenomenal history. I was saying I didn't get a chance to read the whole book, but there's like a whole book about your husband, father's life. And then also you're featured, you know, I've read all these magazine articles about your family, and I know that you're really meaningful partners to World Vision as well. So I think I'm curious about, Liesl, can you give us a little bit of an update on sort of how you got here, how you got to be a family that is like giving so naturally? What is your family's background and how did we get here?
Absolutely. And Danielle, what a pleasure to be here with you today. And thank you so much. Just to give you a little bit of background, you referenced my husband, Vin. And so I'll start with his story. Vin is a refugee from Vietnam. And so he was born very shortly after the fall of Saigon. And when he was about 3 years old, his parents made a decision to take him and his siblings and to get on a boat and to flee Vietnam. And so they were among the boat people who had fled the country in the late 1970s. And during that journey, they had made it to the shores of Malaysia, but then they were towed back out to sea. And so they were at sea without food, without water. And then it was a ship from World Vision that ended up rescuing his family. And so there's this very long history with our family and with World Vision, because our family would not exist had it not been for that World Vision ship that picked up my husband.
Wow.
And then on my side of the family, I was born in South Korea. I immigrated to the U.S. as a child along with my parents. And then my father decided that he would move our family to rural Arkansas. And so we ended up in this small farming community. My parents worked in the chicken industry. And then my dad moved us to this single wide trailer in the middle of nowhere on some farmland so that we could farm. And sometimes when I tell that story, people say, oh, that sounds so familiar. Isn't there a movie about that? And I say, yes, there is. The movie Minari, that was written and directed by my younger brother based on my family story. And so for both my husband and me, we ended up growing up in Arkansas. Both of us, our last name is Chung. I was a Korean Chung. He's a Vietnamese Chinese Chung. And what are the odds that we would end up in Arkansas? And that's where we met. And the two of us, we have been so incredibly blessed by many opportunities throughout our life. And so I think because of that, we have developed this passion for really helping children reach the full potential of who God intends for them to be. And so because of that, our family has really jumped in and partnered with organizations like World Vision to help kids who have a lack of basics like clean water or a lack of education or kids who are subjected to violence and trafficking. And so that's really what our family has stepped into.
Wow. That's an incredibly concise explanation of what is an incredibly complex, I'm sure, and difficult and challenging and also amazing journey. So thanks for that. That was incredible. And I have seen that movie. So I feel like I have seen the movie of your life. Is that weird to have a movie about your life?
Oh, it is very odd. My brother recreated some scenes, for instance, that trailer house. When I started watching, I thought, I can't believe he replicated just what it looked like. And so, but it was just really special to see it as well, too, because I think my brother did it in a way that really honored the sacrifices that my parents made and that my grandmother made during the early years that we were in this country.
You know, I had this question about that movie, which I guess is about your life, but it's that really great portrayal of the crazy Christian guy. You know, where you keep expecting. So when I was watching the movie, I kept expecting that crazy Christian guy who was, you know, a little on the edge of like mental illness or something. But I kept expecting him to turn bad. If you know what I mean, like all the characters of those types of Christians always kind of turn bad in movies and they end up being these like very terrible people underneath and stuff. But it just, I felt like there was such a great, and maybe this is about your brother's own faith journey, I don't know, but I felt like holding that, you know, there's a brokenness here and there's like a weirdness here, but there's a goodness here at the same time.
Yes.
And I felt like holding that was so intentional, it felt.
Yes. Well, the character in the movie, his name is Paul. That was not his name in real life. He is actually based on a character who was a big part of our lives when we were growing up. And I'll refer to him as Paul, which is the fictional name. And Paul really did have this deep, deep faith in Jesus. So he had grown up under rough circumstances. He was a member of a gang. He ended up in jail, and that's where he met Jesus. And when he got out of jail, he was just so deep in his faith to the point of even bearing a cross and carrying it around town. And Paul ended up becoming really good friends with my dad. And so here you have my dad, who is this immigrant from Korea. He loved to read. He had been a soldier in the Korean army fighting alongside Americans. And then here you had Paul, who was also a veteran, but then a former gang member, and then now a proud cross-dragging Jesus follower. And these two men could not be more different from each other, but they became such close friends. And I think that story really tells you that more than what draws us apart, there's a lot of common humanity that brings us together.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And just the power that faith can play in the way that we see others differently.
Absolutely. And when I was growing up, Paul would always tell me that God had big things in store for me. And so he spoke that into my life throughout my childhood.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Caleb, you are next generation here. So I kind of feel a little bit of resonance with you already, even though we haven't met yet, except for this podcast. And it's that, you know, my parents were both rescued from poverty by the church, really, by Christians. And so I have had this deep, like if people will say to me, because I've done a lot of social justice advocacy in my life and stuff like that. And people will go like, where did that come from? And I'll go like, well, kind of have to start by telling you the story of my parents. And I don't know, do you feel that way too? Like, is this just something like you grew up with this ethos, or what's your story? Like how, because you're part of the next gen group at World Vision. You've already, you know, been really active in philanthropic activities. You've raised a bunch of money. You're really involved in overseas global poverty. What's your story, and how does it, you know, how is it specific to you?
Yeah. So certainly, as you mentioned, my story is really framed in the broader story of my family. So I think it's impossible to really think about the work that I've done and understand it without understanding where I come from. I come from parents who, you know, were benefactors of a legacy of generosity and who chose to step into it because of that. I come from a family that has a deep faith. And because of that, we view service and philanthropy as just a natural extension of who we are. And so certainly the broader narrative is important. For me specifically, I got involved at a young age when I learned about the clean water crisis. And so I learned about the hundreds of millions of children who have to walk to fetch water that isn't even clean. Then even though I was young, there's something that really resonated with me about that. And so I decided to start fundraising and running races. I actually ran a half marathon when I was 10 years old to begin to raise money for this. And gradually that just grew into bigger things. So as you mentioned, I'm pretty involved with World Vision now. I'm part of a group called the Next Gen Network, which is a group of students who care about global issues. And I think through all of it, the biggest thing that I see is that it's part of this idea of generosity and giving back that started even before me, right? The people who helped my family and then the sacrifices made by those in my family who came before me, I'll never fully understand them, but I do know that my life is a large product of that. And so in the same way, it's now my turn to begin investing in the future. For once again, stories that I may never see and may never know, but that are certainly woven in.
That's beautiful. Caleb, talk to me. So you're 10 years old and you're running half a marathon. That's fun. I have an 11-year-old and that's never happening. So tell me a little bit about, like, if you remember, and maybe your mom can fill in the blanks here too, but like, so you're, by 10, you're already active. Like, you're already like, we got to do something about this. Do you remember as a kid, like, what provoked you? Like, you heard about this issue. Did you go to sleep at night thinking about it? Were you disrupted by it? Like, how did that process work?
Yeah. So one thing, it certainly wasn't fun. I was not a runner and I still am not. But I think disrupted is a good word to use. It was certainly, I think it was that I struggled to imagine the idea that in the same world, there were children my age who were growing up in remarkably different circumstances, right? Like to grow up where I am, I've been so blessed to have this life where, you know, clean water, that's just a given. It's just a basic necessity. And yet for so many people, they struggled even just to get that. And so at the time, I didn't really understand the entire issue. I didn't know much about extreme poverty or exactly how it worked. But what I did know is that there was a problem and that there was something I could do to help fix it.
Now, Caleb, did you see a video? Did you hear about it? Did you go on a trip? Like, what was the catalyst?
So the catalyst, if I had to pick one, I actually think it was a video. So there's this video that World Vision shows. It's of a young girl named Violet. And it describes Violet's just walk for water and what her daily life looks like. She rises early. She walks for kilometers to fetch water. And I think seeing that video, it was just impossible for me to imagine myself or any of my peers in the same situation. And so just the fact that it was so different, and it really stuck with me. And I felt like I had to do something.
How did that work with your peers? Talk to me about how that went with other 10-year-olds and what they thought, and what was that reaction like?
Yeah, so I think one thing, as I look back, is you'd be surprised at how many 10-year-olds genuinely do care about these issues. And so when it came to my first half marathon, I actually told a lot of my close friends about it. And I wasn't the only one who ended up running and raising money. And so there's actually a team of us, around six or seven, all of us in middle school and elementary school. And we decided to run this race together to raise money for clean water. Many of my peers joined me.
That's amazing. That's so good.
And if I were to add to this story, Danielle, so my husband and I, we were running races with Team World Vision. So it is running half marathons and full marathons to raise money for clean water. And so we had done maybe one or two races prior to that. And so Caleb had seen us talk about this. We were doing this with our neighbors. And so our neighborhood was doing it. And when Caleb was 10, and sorry, Caleb, not to embarrass you here, but he was this unathletic, chubby 10-year-old who just wanted to play with his Legos. And so we were shocked when he came to us at age 10 and said he wanted to run a half marathon. My gut reaction, and this is what I told him, is I said, Caleb, that's wonderful, but you're only 10, so you can't do this. You have to wait till you're older. And so I thought that was the end of it. But then Caleb came back, now with another buddy, and then the two of them made their case about why they felt like they should be able to run this. And what he ended up saying is he said, I know I'm 10, but along this entire route, they're going to have water for us, which means I'm going to be better off than these kids who have to go the same distance, and they're doing it for water that isn't even clean. And so when he said that, I mean, what do you do as a mom? You can't say no to that. And so at that point, we said, okay, you can do this, and we'll train with you. And so we ended up doing this with him. And I think as parents, Vin and I we weren't doing this because we thought this is going to influence our kids. We were doing this because we felt like this is something that we ourselves are really passionate about. And so we're going to jump in and support this cause of clean water, whether it's running these races or giving as a family. But somehow through this, our kids saw it and then came along. And so then Caleb at age 10, then his brother, who around the same age started doing this as well, and then now his younger sister. And so this has been the unexpected blessing for our family to see that what Vin and I have been passionate about, that our kids have seen this and then stepped in. Even at age 10, when I think Caleb would have rather played with his Legos than go out and train for half marathon.
I'm so glad you pitched in, because I was thinking from a parent point of view, like when we're talking about legacy, much of legacy is future, right? We're thinking about like, well, in what way am I living now that might impact the future? And this is in a family, this is true too, you know, like, and so I was wondering, you know, I love that you explained that, like, you were like, oh, that's nice, honey, but like, and then he came back. You know, I love that tenacity, Caleb. Well done. But also, I think as a parent, maybe you could speak to this. You know, you weren't intentionally trying. You're not trying to manipulate your kids, but you are passionate about these things. These things matter to you. Like, how do you help your kids really get involved, like not just applaud your efforts and say that's really nice, because you were the first generation that can really remember the impact of poverty and exclusion and, you know, limitations like that. So you have this like felt, I know what this feels like. I feel like that's such a driver for people. We have, you know, that empathy is so huge. But then that next generation who doesn't know what that's like, how do you as a mother, as a parent, instill this in your kids or pass this on?
Well, I'll be interested to get Caleb's thoughts on this, but I feel like so much of it is not even what you say, but it's what you do. Because I think if it is something that you do and your kids see that, then that's really what ends up inspiring them. And I will say, even though I say it's not what we said, for Caleb, when he started training for these half marathons, the other blessing that I received as a mom is I ended up being his running partner. And so he's 10 years old, and we would go and we would do these long training runs together. And to keep his mind off of the run, I would talk the entire time. And so I would talk about all kinds of things. I'd talk about church history and faith, or I'd talk about politics or just all these different issues. I told him about the Reformation. And so these ended up becoming really special moments for me as a mom to be able to spend with my son as he's doing this. And so I think role modeling, and then I think looking for these opportunities where you can step into what they're passionate about and encouraging them is what I would say. But I'd actually love to hear Caleb's thoughts on that, on what you think has been influential for you.
I do think a lot of it is role modeling. You know, growing up, the first place that you look is to your parents on how you ought to live and what you ought to do. But I think a lot of it is also this idea of legacy. Now, we think about legacy as, you know, what comes after, but there's also the importance of understanding what comes before. And so growing up, my parents were, you know, they were always very intentional about making sure that we understood where our family came from and, you know, everything that happened along the way. And so because of that, much of my understanding of the world was, you know, it was just natural for me to think about things in the context of the bigger picture. So I'd say that was really important for the development of philanthropy. At the time, it really didn't seem that unusual to be, we're learning about these global issues and stepping in. And now looking back is really when I realized it was really my parents that were very intentional about making sure that it didn't feel unusual for me. But that's just what you did.
This episode has been really inspiring. I hope you've been enjoying learning and being inspired by people who are making a real difference. One of the things we want to highlight is the Beyond Access program. And the Beyond Access program exists because of Strong Women, Strong World's focus on women's and girls' empowerment-centered interventions that are integrated and sequenced in a new way. So basically, they really want to understand what's working well and what is not so that they can capture best practices that can be applied in future programs. This is innovative. It's iterative learning approach, you know, and this is really cutting edge ways of making development the very best thing it can be. So Beyond Access, a learning approach and research partnerships. If this is up your alley in terms of really not just giving generally, but giving very strategically, this is what this is about, and we'd love for you to be part of it. So the place to access this is Strong Women, Strong World, Beyond Access. We'll put the link in the show notes. All right, let's keep hearing from the Chunks.
Caleb, I'm interested, and I want to come back to you, Liesl, to talk about business and sort of philanthropy as a business owner and operator and things like that. But Caleb, can I ask you a little bit? I'm fascinated, you know, by your generation particularly, and really, like, fascinated in a way that also, like, I'm a little bit, like, sorry that you're facing things that it seems like you're facing. And I don't know how you feel about this in terms of your peers, but it feels like a deep existential dread on your generation. You know, just like it feels like a bit of a despair, at least statistically and then anecdotally. What tell me about what that's like and what you see on your generation and how this might speak to that somehow, or how you're trying to be a light there.
There is a sense of dread among my generation. There's many issues in this world that are difficult, and especially in the modern day with all the access to information, a lot of information that's sensationalized, like it's natural that my generation would grow up fearing the future. At the same time, though, I think on the flip side, there's also this deep yearning for change. So in my generation, like, you see a lot of people who they face these issues, but they also care very deeply about them. Now, a lot of times, because we're youth, we don't necessarily know how to get involved or what to do about it. You know, oftentimes we'll turn to social media and to vent our opinions, or, you know, show up to different activist events. But I think there is cause for hope in that, yes, my generation, like, we see all of these issues and we have dread and worry about it. But at the same time, there is also this understanding that, you know, the end isn't over, that, you know, we can still make a difference. And so for me in particular, a lot of what I see is this need for youth to understand how they can make a difference and get plugged in with real avenues for change. And that's one of the things that I love about World Vision. You know, we learn about these global issues and the problems going on, but then we're also equipped with ways to go and combat them and to bring about positive change. And so I'd say, yes, there is dread, but there's also a lot of opportunity here.
Caleb, how does actually advocating for these, you know, against global poverty and water projects and things connect you in a way that
represents faith to your generation as well. So I think there's also been some studies that have come out lately that are like, your generation is more open to faith than, you know, for years and years and a long time, people have been pretty closed, especially to Christianity. Do you find that as a means by which you can express your faith? Like how open are the people around you to that?
Yeah. So I think the two are definitely interwoven. You know, one of the interesting things about recent studies is that my generation, they're less likely to call themselves religious, and yet many of them resonate with the basic values of religion in the areas of overlap. And so even if they're less likely to call themselves a Christian or to attend church, they do care about, you know, biblical notions of justice or things like love and compassion. And so when it comes to philanthropy and giving back and activism, I think a lot of it is being able to connect with my other peers on that basic level. Because even for my peers who aren't Christian, you know, many of them agree that these humanitarian crises are a problem that we need to combat. And so it's actually an avenue for Christian witness, because first you can connect with them on this basic level, on these basic values that you agree on. And then from there, you can really you can work together and understand, you know, where these values come from and how they fit into the Christian worldview.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good tool. Liesl, tell me, you're very successful business, both of you in business. Tell me from a business perspective, how does this inform the way you do business? How does this, from a business angle, talk to me about that.
Sure, I'm happy to. Well, my husband and I, we have a medical practice here in Southern Colorado. My husband, he's a physician, he's a dermatologist, a Mohs surgeon who specializes in diagnosis and treatment of skin cancer. And then my background is in business. And he and I, we both graduated from grad school on the same day. So he graduated from medical school. I graduated from business school. And never did we think that the two of us would ever work together. But then we ended up coming to Colorado Springs, and he started a medical practice. And I told him I would help him out for 6 months. So that was the deal, 6 months. And here we are almost 15 years later, and we're still working together. And so we have medical offices throughout Southern Colorado. We are dermatology and plastic surgery, and we really specialize in the diagnosis and treatment of skin cancer. So that's what we have built our reputation on. And I would say in terms of just our organization, I feel like there are really three phases that we went through. So in the early days when we were starting this up, it was, oh, I hope this can be successful so that we can actually pay the bills and support our family. Then there's the next phase where we got really passionate about different causes. And so we felt like we're running this business in order to give. But I think we're really in a different place now, which is we find so much joy in our work. And so there is the aspect of we do this and therefore we can generate finances to give. But then I think we really feel like we're doing God's work in the service of others. And that's taking care of our patients and also just taking care of our people. And I think it's when we found this joy that we've also been able to bring others along in this journey. And I'll say a big part of this has been our own personal journey. So when we first started our medical practice, we very much wanted to tithe not only personally, but also out of the company. And that was just something that had been ingrained in us by our own parents. And when we did this, we ended up choosing to sponsor a child protection project in Cambodia. Initially, we thought we were going to do something in healthcare, but then World Vision came to us and said, if you want to do healthcare, absolutely. But we just want you to know about this issue we're dealing with in Cambodia around women and children who are being trafficked. And the more we heard about it, the more we felt like we couldn't walk away. And so that was year two of our medical practice when we knew, okay, we've actually got funds to give. But it wasn't until a couple of years later that we actually made a trip and we went and saw the work. And I think that's when just everything changed for us. It was a really hard trip. As Caleb mentioned, our family, we do work in clean water, which is always wonderful to go see. But when you're dealing with the issue of trafficking and the rescue of children and rehabilitation, that's a completely different issue. And it ended up breaking our hearts. So my husband, he was playing volleyball with some street kids, and he was a football player, and he'd never gotten hurt, but playing volleyball with these street kids, he tore his ACL. So he ended up just hobbling around throughout most of our trip. And then for me, spending time at a trauma recovery center with kids as young as 6 years old who had been rescued, it was just life-changing for me. So we came back from that trip. We were emotionally broken. He was literally physically broken. And we felt like we had to live our lives in a different way. And so that really started our journey and really started to integrate the things that we're passionate about with the work that we do here in Colorado Springs.
I love that shift of, like, I mean, I love those phases too. That's so helpful because people are at different spots, you know, and if you're just trying to pay the bills, it's like you're not really quite like, I don't know. But this idea that you pay the bills, then you get a little bit of ability then and capacity then to be able to give. But now you're shifting to like the whole thing is gift. The whole thing is about raising people, inviting people in to this different way of, you know, this is not defining you. This is a beautiful way of creating capacity to give in everything. I love that. Just even the posture of like, all of this is gift. All of these people are part of a legacy of a story that they're all invited into something bigger than ourselves.
Yes. And I actually think there is a hunger for that. I think regardless of what your faith background is, I think there is a real hunger where people want to be able to do something. And I do think, as Caleb talked about with his generation, there's this desire to see change. And I think when we ended up making that shift and saying in our work, we want to bring other people along in this. So in terms of what that looks like, just to make this tangible. So for instance, we have an aesthetic division. It's called Clara. We named this after our daughter because we knew that if we did that, we would stay mission true. And so at Clara, we end up donating all of our profits to help women and children here and around the world. And so our team members can actually sit on grant committees and decide which charities are going to receive these grants, and then to be able to go out when it's local and deliver these grant checks and just be a part of this generosity that they have helped to create within the organization. And then we've taken teams with us. And so we've taken teams to go serve in Haiti. There's a team that's going to be going to Honduras. And so they're able to see that the work that they do here links in not only with taking care of patients here, but then also transforming communities in other places as well. And over the last 3 to 4 years, we've consistently been named one of the best places to work in Colorado Springs, as well as the state of Colorado. And I say that not because I think it's anything we've done, but I think it's once we've just opened this up to say everybody can go with us on this journey, I think that's what's attracted people and has made this a transformative workplace for them.
That's amazing. I love it. And just that bigger purpose, right? Like you're invited in to work, but your work actually can have an impact that's even beyond, you know, getting a paycheck and having enough. I love that so much.
Absolutely. And I think that's what people are really looking for, because at the end of the day, you are spending most of your waking hours in the workplace. And one way to do that is to say, well, I just want to be at a workplace where it's going to help me live the rest of my life. But then if you can be at a workplace that integrates with what you actually want for your life, then that's a completely different way to live your life.
Yeah. And that's much of the work, I feel like, of faith in our lives is getting ourselves at the center of every single thing. So that's you're inviting people to get themselves out of the center of their lives so that they can get into something bigger. It's beautiful. Thank you for doing that and for sharing that. What would be, for both of you, I'll ask this question, what are your greatest challenges in this regard? Like, how do you stay with this as a, like, how do you stay passionate and excited and hopeful? What are the challenges that face you that kind of tempt you maybe to give up?
I think one of the big things is that there's a lot of distractions. You know, when you care about issues and you're initially very passionate, like that feels like that's all there is. But then, of course, life has a way of getting in the way. So I think for me, one of the big challenges, particularly at a time like this, I'm in a transition period, just recently started college this past year. And so there's just so much going on and there's a lot of chaos. And so I think the big struggle is just remembering what matters at the end and trying to align yourself with that. Because really, at the end of the day, the things that matter for God and the things that matter in the context of eternity are very different than the things that matter, you know, in the day-to-day or even in the context of just your own life. And so a lot of it is just trying to reframe myself and to focus on the things that truly matter the most.
Caleb, do you have tips on how you do that? How do you keep what matters most center?
Yeah, I think a big thing is keeping my faith at the center. And so even in daily life, just making sure that, you know, I always prioritize faith in my schedule and the things that I do. And once you do that, once you begin to align yourself with, you know, faith and God's will, I think the rest just unfolds as it ought to.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Really good. And for you, what are the challenges that face you that kind of that would prevent you from living in this way? And then how do you meet them?
Yeah, well, Danielle, I think as Caleb talked about, just there's a lot of noise. I mean, that's definitely true. So I run a medical practice. I am also a mom with 4 kids. And then there are all these other activities that I throw myself into. And so with all of that, there's just a lot of busyness that happens. So I think that's one challenge. And I think anyone out there who is a mom, who's running a business, I mean, they can understand what that is. The second challenge is sometimes as you do this work, you think, does it really matter? I mean, like when you're in the thick of trying to wrangle your kids and then you know, they're fighting or whatever it is, you think, does this really matter? Or when you're running your company and trying to do the best you can, then you think, does this really matter? And I think in moments like that, the story that I love is this story that I heard about Mother Teresa, where someone visited her and the need is just so overwhelming. And she's just going from person to person, but there's just so much poverty. And she was asked, what you're doing, how can you just keep going? And she was being asked that question because the person's wondering, the need is so overwhelming, are you even making a dent? And her response to that was that God does not call us to go do big things. He just calls us to be faithful with all the little things. And I love that story because I remind myself of that all the time when I just think, okay, does this matter? Is it working out? I just remember God calls us to be faithful in all of those little things in our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a difference to this one, right? So like also keeping your eyes on what God has asked you to do is so beautiful. Yeah. Are there any other advice or tips or things that you want to say for people who are contemplating now and thinking about their own lives and the way that they're living now that might make a difference later? Any other things that come to your mind, tips? Caleb, to your generation, is there anything you'd like to say to sort of either parents that are like walking alongside their kids or, you know, young people that might be listening, things that you could advise them?
Yeah, so I'll say a couple of things. So the first is people have asked me, how did you end up where you are with your business and the work that you do? And I say, obedience comes really just one step at a time. It's not that we create this grand plan of what our organization looks like or this project we're launching. We just go one step at a time. And it's kind of like when Caleb and I train for those half marathons, we just put one foot in front of the other. And so I think obedience comes one step at a time. And then when you look back, you realize that you've come such a long way. And so that's what I would say for the folks who are just starting out and they think, how am I going to create this big legacy? That isn't it. It's just that one step. The second piece of advice, and this advice is going to be for actually just maybe all the young people out there, because this is something that I tell my kids. And so this is going to sound very familiar to Caleb. And what I tell Caleb and my other kids is that there is nothing that you can do that is going to make me love you any less. And then I say, but there is also nothing that you can do which is going to make me love you any more. And the reason that that's so important to know is we've just got to know that God loves us so deeply. I mean, he, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us, right? So while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And so that is God's love in us. And I think we've just got to know that love so deeply because everything we do stems out of that. And so that's what I would tell all the young people because that's what I tell my own children.
I love that. It's one of my favorite concepts, is trying to live your life in such a way that you're living from love, not for it. And that's one of the greatest struggles, I think, of all time, is just to simply live from love instead of for love. It protects us from pleasing people or ourselves, but it also protects us from constantly proving all the time. That's great advice, and really challenging advice if we're actually going to live it. Thank you.
It is, because you're constantly having to remind yourself that God loves you. And I think that knowledge. And so that's why, as a parent, I always remind my kids that there's nothing you can do that is going to make me love you anymore. And that's Jesus's love for you.
Caleb, any advice that you would either give your younger 10-year-old self, or that you might give others as they're trying to figure out their life's calling and purpose and what they're going to do? I mean, you're right. You started college. So this is like that time where kids are trying to figure out what they're supposed to do with their lives. And, you know, any advice?
So I say this as someone who's still trying to figure it out, still doesn't know everything and what to do. And so I think take the advice with a grain of salt. But I think gratitude is something that I've recently realized the importance of. Just being grateful while you're in the middle of the journey, being grateful for the journey. And so if I were to give maybe a suggestion to anyone my age, it's, gratitude, it helps a lot, just putting things into perspective. And then it also will help compel you towards the path that you're supposed to take.
That's great. Are you still running?
So I'm not running half marathons these days. Although right now I'm doing a lot with World Vision Next Gen. So actually, this is another piece of advice. If anyone is interested, there's a group at World Vision of youth who are passionate about ending global poverty. It's called World Vision Next Gen. It's a great group. And I highly recommend looking into it.
Hey guys, I really hope you're enjoying this episode. I know I had an incredible time recording it, and I've been learning so much. Strong Women, Strong World is our partner for this event, and much of their work, of course, is centering the most vulnerable children in the globe, which are living in often marginalized communities and in the world in conflict zones, and what we call fragile contexts. And they're looking for basic human need. And we want to keep emphasizing that their survival and then thriving is interdependent to our survival and thriving to really be who we want to be. But I also want to draw your attention to an empowering thing that we were part of launching, and it's called Brave at braveglobal.org. I want to bring your attention because it is an empowering way of practicing what we want to see happen over there, right here. And I believe that these happen at the same time. That the more, you know, sort of generosity and self-transcendence is a little bit like an exercising routine where you begin to exercise a muscle and it grows in capacity. Or it's like love. If you know about this, the more you invest in love, the more love there is. I mean, it's kind of miraculous, but it's kind of neat. And I think the same is true with generosity, and the same is true with empowerment, is the more that you empower, the more empowering of a person you become, and the more that empowerment travels. So Brave Global is a local strategy right here in Western context that identifies youth at risk of human trafficking and gets there first. So before the trafficking begins. So this came out of years of my life, over 20 years of my life working with women stuck in sexual exploitation who had been trafficked or exploited, and trying to undo the damage that had been done. And many of them saying, like, this began when I was 11, or this began when I was 12. And we know that in America, particularly, we know the stats are 70 to 80% of all domestic sex trafficking victims in America come from foster care or marginalized backgrounds. So we help coach and provide ways for communities everywhere. So from small towns to big cities to urban centers to faith communities to nonprofits to schools to teachers, you know, everywhere to actually reach vulnerable girls. And vulnerable youth, because we actually have a guys thing now too, but vulnerable youth with a message of empowerment. This is a beautiful way of living a legacy.
So check them out at braveglobal.org. And if starting a Brave community, which is what we would love, which is a support group and maybe an event in your local community that begins to just really put girls that would be marginalized or invisible, putting them at the center of the story. You know, there's something just that alone is worthy. But Brave Communities Portal, there's a place where you can join and there's like everything that you need if you wanted to be using that strategy in your local context. I hope it's helpful.